Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. My name is Paula Thompson. I'm your host. And with me are my three dear friends and co-hosts, Chuck Thurston, Andre Rodatis, and Marvin Garin. Hi, you guys.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Boy, we have a great show.
It's not morning everywhere.
You know, it's not. It's evening in some places.
That's correct. We're made aware of that right now.
Yep. Good day to you. Good evening to you. God bless you. And thanks for calling in. We have a great show planned, and that is we have some dear, dear friends from the Center for Unity, which is a marvelous project that has captured my imagination. And I know that it has captured the imagination of several of us on the call today. And, of course, the founders and the workers of the Center for Unity are here with us. And it's so great to have you. We have Mr. Gabriel Reinberg and Lisa Crawford and Gary Tong, three very important people working on this project. And I want to turn it over to you guys and let you, I'll start with you, Gabriel. Good morning or good evening for you. And let you tell us about yourself and about the project so we can just jump right in and start talking about the Center for Unity and what you guys are doing.
Well, thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. I'm calling in from Israel. It's 6 p.m. here. And well, my story is long, and also the story of this project is quite long. The Rancho book found me about 12 years ago, and I started reading it, and I really couldn't stop. So I was reading nonstop, and then about 3 months into the reading, I somehow understood that it could be a good idea to translate it to Hebrew. I contacted the foundation, and about a year later, I was already starting the Hebrew translation. I finished the first draft along with two other team members in 2017, and we've been working on the second revision. And that was my, well, that was a life-changing event. Many things happened because of this. And one of the things that happened is I got to understand who Jesus is, basically not only who Michael of Nebedon is, but the fact that Michael of Nebedon, our Creator Son, was here on the planet as Jesus of Nazareth. And being born Jewish, knowing very little about Jesus until I was basically 40 and started reading the Urantia book, that changed my life. And I asked myself, what is it that I need to be doing with this knowledge? And then many of these ideas that arrived to do these things, I think are, I feel, an answer to this type of prayer of what is it that we need to do. And I'll just summarize by saying the midwayers tell us very clearly that we've never tried to enact on this planet the simple teaching that we are all brothers and sisters, spiritual brothers and sisters, part of a human family, and by virtue of the fact that we are children of the same divine parent. And they said, you never did this experiment en masse. And I think this is what we're trying to do, is to contribute to the understanding globally of this truth and sharing the life and teachings of Jesus, and of course that one particular teaching or revelation, with as many people as we can, way outside the Urantia community. Our target market primarily is what we call the young spiritual seekers who are not affiliated. Sometimes they call themselves spiritual but not religious. Sometimes they call themselves the nones, N-O-N-E-S, because they basically do not identify with anything else when they're asked the question, you know, what are you spiritually? So we're trying to bring the Jesus before Christianity by somehow decoupling Jesus from Christianity, talking only about the facts and the teachings, everything basically that happened before. And hopefully this will be a good idea, and people who normally associate Jesus with Christianity, especially the non-Christians, it is very common for me in Israel to hear that Jesus was a Christian. So many people who are not Christian do not understand that there was a Jesus before Christianity. They simply don't know the facts. So that's what we're trying to do, and we have several projects, and we can talk about them later. So that's my story to Jesus and the why of these projects, the Center for Unity.
Well, I'll keep going, but I just want to tell Andre and Chuck and Marvin, please do jump in. Don't hesitate if you have a question. And thank you, Gabriel. It's so important. I think what you just touched on is vitally important. There's so many misunderstandings on this planet about Jesus and who he is and what he came here to do. And certainly my experience from the Urantia book, and I know you guys share this experience, it gave me Jesus like never before. I mean, I've loved Jesus all my life, and I had a sense of how special Jesus is, even as a small child. But to have the fullness of his life and teachings as presented in the Urantia book was like no other experience I've ever had in my life. And to be up close and personal with Jesus in that way, the way that the Urantia book brings Jesus to us all, it's so, so important to get these teachings out into the world, and which is why you've captured my imagination with your dedication to do this. And I think, you know, you're all uniquely qualified. We all are to do it, you know. But you've become a lightning rod, so kudos to you. Thank you for stepping up and bringing your unique talents and leadership gifts to this project. And it's something I'm fully behind. And I know Andre is too. And I want, you know, us all to share what we know about this project. So Lisa, I'll pass it to you. What brings you to the Center for Unity? What got you involved?
Well, I had begun reading the Urantia book a few years ago, and I was similar to others that I've talked to. I was raised Christian. I was raised in a very conservative Christian home and considered myself religiously Christian until I was in my early 20s. And then I didn't feel as if that religion was large enough to encapsulate all of my beliefs, but I loved Jesus. I just felt like perhaps it was more Pollyannity that was being lived than Christianity. And I explored all the world religions and read and thought about them. And then, as Gabriel said, the Urantia book found me. And when I read it, I knew it would change my life forever. And I said that to my son, who was almost 30. And he's like, how would this book change your life? And I said, it's such a biography of Jesus. It is everything that I ever wanted to know about Jesus. And it filled out this, it fleshed it out for me in a way that now I know that I can truly follow Jesus and pattern my life after his actions and the way that he lived. It was the information I needed. So I started taking some Eucharist classes online, the Urantia Book International School, and took a few of those courses and was very interested in the Urantia Book and wanting to meet people and find things out. And then I saw the Spirit of Truth podcast with Derek Samus, where he interviewed Gabriel. I think it was in April. And I was like, oh my goodness, I want to find out more about this. This is intriguing. And then Gabriel and others, I think Rick Lyon was the one who hosted the sort of a Zoom meet and greet. And there were like 40 people on this Zoom meet and greet. And it was supposed to be an hour and a half. And it was like 2.5 hours. And I was enthralled the entire time and felt that sort of almost tingling hair stand up on the back of your neck, like, you know, maybe you could help with this. So I reached out and asked if there was anything I could do to help. There is a great part on the website that asks for volunteers if you want to help or you think you can contribute any of your skills to the project. And then I met with Gabriel and Sandra on a Zoom and started to help out in whatever capacity I could. And when they would ask me to do something, if I was able to do it, I was delighted to do it. And I have been deeply honored when they asked me to join the executive team. In whatever way I can serve, I want to help with the missions and the projects here because I feel like it does bring Jesus to people.
Thank you. It's really so important. And So Gabriel, can you tell us a little bit about Sandra, too, and just, you know, maybe the genesis of the project and how
Paula,
it's progressing? Yeah, Andre.
What I might suggest as well is before we get too far in is let our listeners know who all is on the broadcast today. We know who, you know, the hosts and co-hosts are. But not all of the others have been introduced, and we have had Mike Robinson from San Diego join us, and we've got Luis Miguel Morales joining us from Argentina as well. And so let's perhaps, Gabriel, would you be able to go around the room and essentially let us know what everybody is doing with regard to the Center for Unity project that is calling in today? You might start with Lisa since she spoke first and then go around with the others that you know are on the call.
Yeah, you've got Gabriel, Gary Tong as well.
Yeah. Sure. So Lisa is in charge of marketing which basically means outreach and marketing communications. She's also in charge of part of the fundraising with Rick, and she's a member of the executive team, which is five of us. Luis is also a member of the executive team, and he's in charge of what we like to call the human talent and the organizational foundations. We're thinking long-term. How do we build an organization for a long, long time? Gary is basically responsible for anything visual and artistic, and specifically our marketing material, the website, and the Discover Team web app. Andre, yourself, you've been serving as an editor for the Discover Jesus app. Paula is one of our advisory board members and a trusted advisor to myself specifically for the last few years. And Mike is our product manager for Discover Jesus. He's also an editor of the content. He leads the development together with Fraser and Lisa and myself. So these are, I think, the people that are here that are part of the project. There's many, many more.
Oh, boy. There really is. And I noticed there was some background noise a moment ago and probably can't be muted, it seems like, Andre, so because of the computer situation. But bear with us, friends. It's a live show. It's live radio, so you're going to have some of that. Can't be helped. But, okay, so, you know, we've heard from Lisa and Gabriel, and I'd love to go ahead and hear from Gary. Gary, what is your experience with the Center for Unity and these wonderful Jesus projects initiated by the Center?
Hi, everyone. It wasn't me making the baby noises, but it might happen now because I've got one of them sitting on my lap. But, my story with the revelation is long, so I won't subject you all to that. But it's not that dissimilar to Lisa Crawford's. I was born and baptized Church of England, but by the time I was 12 or 13, it didn't make much sense to me, the atonement doctrine and the kind of prescribed way that God was anthropomorphized. It caused problems for me, and I decided, I guess very subtly, I didn't realize I was doing it, that I was more interested in science, answering the questions of the universe, and coincided with me being gifted a subscription to the National Geographic, and I got much more interested in science, trying to explain the universe, cosmology giving me the answers that I needed, and that carried on from the age of 12 until maybe 23. I hadn't worked it out at all at the time, but I was just as disenchanted with cosmology's approach towards reality as the churches. I was still, I guess, transfixed by its complicated method of explaining reality. But I was definitely feeling uncomfortable about it. And then a bunch of events happened, and those events led to me obtaining the Urantia book, which is, you know, the genuine balance of true science, real religion, and true philosophy. And then from then I spent so much time reading the book, and slowly, that's my daughter. Come back up here, honey. There we go. And that migrated into me, like, learning, mainly sort of finding the back door to God around the church. I guess that's the best way to explain it. And I think a lot of people are likely to be finding God that way, particularly with the growth in the understanding of the universe, and, well, how we don't really understand the universe. But anyway, it gave me the ability to believe in some in God. Something that wasn't confined to a building or a dogma. And I consecrated myself to sort of learning the book, and then I started interacting with people more, much more, about 15 years ago. And now I'm, you know, I don't take myself very seriously, but I take the work really seriously. I don't have a very high opinion about myself, but I take the master's work very seriously. And when, by happenstance, Gabriel and I were in a conversation about three years ago now, he happened to mention a project he'd been trying to work on. And we talked around it for a little while. The typical Urantia Book students inspired kind of conversation. And then it turned out this project was an early version of what is now being worked on. And it's grown and changed a lot since the time we spoke about it. But it's basically the same thing, which is to discover Jesus in a transcendent way, as Gabriel uses the line, I use it now as well, to discover Jesus before Christianity, discover the real Jesus. And I'm all for that. I think that, again, is a back door, a different door to believing in God that doesn't involve a particular way of having to think. You can find this person, you can find their wonderful actions and their life and teachings without anything else being imposed upon you. You can have a personal relationship with Jesus. You can have a personal relationship with God. And I think, you know, part four of the Urantia Book does that anyway, but this is a kind of downstepping, a softening of it, and it makes it more media rich and interesting. And I think it's got the possibility to capture people's imagination in a way that that religion is now losing its ability to do. So I could talk for a lot longer, so I'm going to mute now.
That was well said, Gary. I loved it when it is able to do that in a way that I do think contemporary religion is losing people.
It's interesting to think about, isn't it? Because, and I tend to view it as something that's happening. It's a natural process. Like Christianity, I think paper 195 speaks about how Christianity is taken, even though it's partial and, you know, or anything that's evolving is partial and has error. It's done a good job for, you know, 2,000 years, but now people are starting to look for something more. And if they're starting to look for something more, there needs to be something more to find. Unfortunately for us, there is. And it seems like a natural progression to me. You know, of course, there's always going to be conflict and friction when old and established meets new and better. But that happens with all, that can happen just within us, right? It's hard to let go of an old idea to find a new truth. So.
So true. So let's move on. Let's ask Louise. Louise, you want to tell us why you got involved with the Center for Unity and the Urantia Book? A little bit about yourself.
Well, hello. Is everyone listening to me?
Yes.
Oh, I wasn't sure that I was really with a good connection because I haven't been here. This is my first time in Blog Talk Radio, so my child was talking to me. It was me.
Okay.
So now I'm here. Well, thank you all, and thank you for the invitation. And I am a reader from like 25 years from now. I'm from Colombia, and I started to search for the truth. I'm from a Catholic family, but I started to not understand what's the thing about God, and I didn't have the whole answers that I wanted to have, so I started to look for different things, different religions, and later on I got into a book very very known in the Spanish speakers community, which is the J.J. Benitez book, which is The Trojan Horse. And it was, it's a novel based on the Urantia Book, where some major in the United States got the opportunity to go back into the times of Jesus. And well, that book was an opening for me because it presented a different Jesus, and very it was like they got me in. So it was, he has like four books, and I wasn't sure he was going to publish a new one, but I was searching when he was going to launch the new one, and someone in the web told me, if you want to look more in the Jesus life, go here to this link. And that was 1998, so it wasn't too much technology right at that moment. So I got into the link, and Eureka, he was, here we go. And I was like, oh my God, what is this? And I was directed in the Rancho book, and I was saying, I couldn't believe what I was reading. I just got trapped into the book. It took me 3 years to read it for the first time, from the cover to the cover, to cover, because it was very difficult for me to understand the concepts. And I'm very picky, and I'm very detailed with things. So I was like, I need to understand the full thing. So that took me to read it in 3 times in 8 years before getting any contact to other students or other readers, because I wasn't sure that I dominated the concepts. So I decided to jump in and find people, because I was realizing by that time that I was not going to dominate any concepts at all. So I started to look for people, and there you go. I found a lot of community, and they're very active, and some point I feel like when you're a reader from the Rancho book, you go from one part to start to comprehend the book, but at the same time you start feeling that you have to do something more about mm-hmm. about everything, you know, about yeah. collaborate and get be part of the of this marvelous endeavor of the Father. And try to get some service out there to try to put some light into this world that is so confused. So that's where I got to get involved in so many things. I was trapped into the artistic part of the book. So I'm making music and videos about the book, and started to get involved some more in the association. And then the pandemic came with the Urantiathon. It was a hackathon that moves a little bit from us, like trying to do something more. And after the hackathon, I got reached for Gabriel, and he says to me, Someone told me that I should be contact you. So we started to talk, to exchange our point of views. We didn't know exactly what we were going to do, but well, here we are. We have an organization which is launching an amazing application in less than 15 days, and we were doing a lot of things with the donations and the support of so many readers and people who really believe that we need to go to the second mile and do something for the planet. And I'm going to shut up my mouth right now because I'm talking too much. So that's my story. That's my story. I'm very thrilled to be part of it. It's like I feel like I have the opportunity also to make the bridge with the Spanish speaking community, which is one of the most growing communities in the Roundtable in the Roundtable Creators. So that's my story.
Thank God for the Spanish translation of the Arantia book, right? Yay.
Right.
It brought.
Yeah, we have some issues right there, but thank God is like it is translated because.
Yeah.
Well.
Many efforts over many years to get this book out there, and it's not been an easy thing to do, but it's so worthwhile, and because it's so beautiful, it is what it is, and we all know it. The time is now, too. And I'm going to ask Mike to say a few words, and then I'll open it up to Chuck and Marvin and Andre to ask you guys some questions, too. And then, Gabriel, I hope you'll tell us all about some projects, and feel free to have your team join in at will. Mike, go ahead and tell us about yourself and how you got involved
sure.
with the Center for Unity.
Yeah, thank you, Paula. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Awesome. Well, I joined up with Gabriel and team in August of last year, so it's been about 15 months when there was a call out for data curators, and I had been a reader since 1989. I was not quite 21 years old, and was living in the Front Range of Colorado, and was exposed to the book by my older brother, who was a truth seeker at the time, and. I, unlike probably many others, I was not raised Christian. I was raised really with no religion in a household. My parents ran away from a very conservative Mennonite upbringing in northern Indiana and ran away to Colorado as teenagers to elope. And their parents, my grandparents, were Amish and had left the Amish faith. So there was quite a rebellion away from organized religion, and so really we didn't speak about religion at all. But yet the seeds were there for me to seek for truth, and at just about the time I turned 20, I was exposed to Jesus and to Christianity, and I knew there was something there, but I knew there were pieces missing. So when I saw the Gestione magazine, Life After Death, and the images that were portrayed in that magazine, that was for me the piece that hooked me in, and I started reading, made it through the book twice in the next 2 years, and became a very serious student. So skipping ahead to when I saw this call out for data curators, I knew there was something that I could contribute, and this felt right. So I came to this meeting with Gabriel, prepared with this quote about from paper 195, if we could only bring Jesus to life, in today's day and age. And of course, it turned out to be their mission statement, really, that was driving the Discover Jesus Project. And so I started data curating, and then I moved into an editing role to assist Andre. And then I moved into a technical editing role to help hyperlink the essays into all the various 600 or 700 different nodes, as we call them, that are throughout the project of people, places, and topics and locations. And then Gabriel asked me to be project manager at the earlier part of this year. So my involvement has continued to increase, and I've continued to feel the calling that we need this contemporary interface to the Urantia book, and that there are stories that deserve to be told that are often scattered throughout part four of the book. And this helps in sort of our Wikipedia style presentation of part four for people to read, those stories of individuals like Abner and David Zebedee and those unsung heroes that really didn't make it into the Bible or biblical records, and read them, and finding their connections to other people that maybe are unsung heroes, like Jesus' younger sister Ruth, and them running away to Philadelphia with Abner. And so, there's all these connections, and I feel like my hope is for this experience for readers to be a kind of a choose-your-own-adventure as you read through essays and see links to other peoples and places and topics, that it might just allow for an individual journey of discovery that is unique and accessible to the way that people consume content today, which is mostly online versus paper, traditional hardback books. So that's my story.
Yay, thank you. So, crew, I want to open it up to you guys. You have any questions, Marvin, Chuck, Andre?
Yeah, I've got a few, a couple of thoughts and some questions. I'll try and be succinct. Am I creating any feedback, by the way? I just unmuted.
No, you sound great.
Okay. So I sort of have a cluster of thoughts and a question or two, and I've had some good conversations with Gabriel about, I wouldn't call it a concern. It's more a set of qualifications around how we go about sharing the heart and soul of the Urantia Revelation in a way that reaches people and touches them. And I think Center for Unity is making a superb effort. But my question, and I'll just share a couple of passages first that sort of set the stage for this. The first is, it's in the paper on personality survival, but it makes a general statement about systems and systemic arrangement. And really the core issue, you know, when you've got a system of belief or a system of presentation or a systemic approach to sharing the essence of the Urantia book, is what is it that's front and center? What is it that is peripheral and supportive? Where in that systemic arrangement of any endeavor do the parts fit? And are they in good and right arrangement with each other to accomplish a long-term best purpose? And so there's this statement. In aggregations, this is 112.119, in aggregations, parts are added. In systems, parts are arranged. Systems are significant because of organization, positional values. In a good system, all factors are in cosmic position. In a bad system, something is either missing or displaced, deranged. So for instance, in Christianity, I think one of the core mistakes of Christianity is to make the religion about the person of Jesus and put him front and center and central. And it's not that that's a bad thing. It's that it's a misemphasis. And the book says that in a few different places. And Jesus himself says that. And here's a passage related to that. I'll just sort of say right out front my concern, my issue. I think there are three ways you can proceed in trying to pursue the mission of the Urantia Revelation in the world going forward. One, and there are other ways to think about this, but these are three primary categories to me methodologically. One is you put front and center the teachings, the core teachings of the gospel, the essence of a changed way of life in parent-child relationship with God and with sister-brother relationship with each other and the core elements of the gospel that Jesus was teaching. So front and center is the gospel itself and a changed way of life. And peripheral to that and supportive of that are Jesus on the one side as the exemplar of that changed way of life, and the Urantia book on the other side as a new revelation and an upstepped revelation of those core truths, like what they mean by eternal life and the will of God and what they mean by a parent-child relationship with God. So gospel front and center, Jesus and the Urantia book peripheral. The other systemic arrangements is you can put the Urantia book front and center and say, this is all about this book. And Jesus is part of it, and the gospel is part of it, but it's this book that's the big deal here. Then the third thing you can do is put Jesus front and center and say the book is simply a new set of teachings about this person, Jesus, and the gospel is interesting, but what's important is the person of Jesus and how central he is and who he is. So I think we just need to be conscious of those emphases and how we arrange them and what we put front and center. And so I'll just share a couple of other quotes, and then I'll share one other thought, and then I'll hush up because people have shared lots of good stuff here. This is 138.6. Jesus 6.3. Jesus endeavored to make clear to his apostles the difference between his teachings and his life among them, and the teachings which might subsequently spring up about him. Said Jesus, "My kingdom and the gospel related thereto shall be the burden of your message." And he said in other places, "Don't make me the central message. Make this changed way of life around these teachings I've shared with you and the way that I've lived the message. Don't focus unduly on my person." He says, "My kingdom and the gospel related thereto shall be the burden of your message. Be not sidetracked into preaching about me and about my teachings. Proclaim the gospel of the kingdom and portray my revelation of the Father in heaven. But do not be misled into the bypaths of the creating legends and building up a cult having to do with beliefs and teachings about my beliefs and teachings." And they end the paragraph by saying, "But again, they did not understand why he thus spoke, and no man dared to ask why he so taught them." So they were perplexed by this, and because it's subtle. It's really subtle stuff. And there's one other passage that sort of echoes that theme, and this is not all of them. There are other passages in the text that echo it, and we're all familiar with this one too, 175:19. "Sooner or later, another and greater John the Baptist is due to arise proclaiming, quote, 'The kingdom of God is at hand,' meaning a return to the high spiritual concept of Jesus, who proclaimed that the kingdom is the will of his heavenly Father, dominant and transcendent in the heart of the believer, and doing all this without in any way referring either to the visible church on earth or to the anticipated second coming of Christ. There must come a revival of the actual teachings of Jesus, such a restatement as will undo the work of his early followers, who went about to create a socio-philosophical system of a belief regarding the fact of Michael's sojourn on earth. In a short time, the teaching of this story about Jesus nearly supplanted the preaching of Jesus' gospel of the kingdom. In this way, a historical religion displaced that teaching in which Jesus had blended man's highest moral ideas and spiritual ideals with man's most sublime hope for the future, eternal life, and that was the gospel of the kingdom." So, I mean, I love Jesus. Jesus to me is my father, my master. But the core thing we need to present, I think, is the profoundly transformed way of life that he showed us, that each of us can have, and really unfold the parent-child relationship and the sister-brother relationship and the indwelling spirit and the will of God and love and eternal life and faith, the things he taught, and cite the examples of his life as exemplary of this profoundly different way to live that each of us can have. So end of story except for one thing, and that is, I think if you must mention Christianity, Gabriel, and I understand why, with Center of Union, the tagline, "Jesus before Christianity," I think you'd be better off going with something like "Jesus before Christianity," "Jesus in Christianity," and "Jesus beyond Christianity." Because I think what you want to convey is that Jesus and what he taught and what his teachings are much larger than any particular religion, including Christianity. The reach is much more universal. He's a universal figure. But his teaching is a universally applicable teaching across interfaith and many religions and spiritual seekers who are not religious and have no interest in religious institutions. So I like Jesus beyond Christianity. So thanks for putting up with my long soliloquy here. good work.
I'd love to hear some of the response of the CFU people to some of Marvin's points. Would anybody like to respond? Gabriel, first of all, do you have any response to that?
Well, thank you, Marvin. This is really very, very helpful.
Hold on, Gabriel, before you continue on. Marvin, we're getting an echo, so maybe.
Okay.
Sure. Thank you. Sorry. Thanks, Marvin. Go ahead, Gabriel.
So I think I'll just explain a little bit our, let's say, the frame or the system, basically, that we have right now and how we try our best to do what Marvin suggested, which I think is a great framework of looking at it. So one thing I'll say is we are working on several fronts or several projects which are, of course, interconnected and are working in parallel, but they started at different times and they have different timelines and different progression. So this is a work in progress, and I feel that slowly our Father is revealing the divinely timed pieces. And of course, we can only see what we have so far. And then by doing more work, we are guided to do more things in a way that really works this tapestry of projects into a system that is, you know, the pieces are arranged and they're working together. So I'd like to describe the system and in so doing a little bit answer Marvin's question. I'll just say first that the meme, Jesus Before Christianity, and of course we can use several more others or Beyond Christianity, the function of that meme is to disassociate Jesus from Christianity in a way that attempts to engage people who are not interested in Christianity for many reasons. So that's the function of that meme. And we could use others as well that have the same function, but that's why we're using it. We're hoping that by saying, listen, we don't want to talk to you about Christianity. We're not a Christian organization. And the reason we want to share with you Jesus is because if you are a spiritual seeker and you're looking for truth on this planet, perhaps you will be benefit your search and your life by looking into and understanding what one of the most advanced people spiritually said and did and taught. And then, so from that perspective, we're doing the things that we're doing to cater to a person like that, that says, you know, why would Jesus be beneficial to me in my life, in my life situation? So by showing and sometimes telling people about Jesus, about his teachings, we want to answer that question in their minds and then for them to draw benefit from connecting to those stories and the morals and insights that are very helpful. And for example, one very simple idea is, let's say you're looking at a particular scene where Jesus and Ganymed are helping two courtesans in Rome. And from that scene, by presenting the details with a little bit of analysis or opinion, so to speak, which is what we're doing in the Discover Jesus app, you basically can say, listen, here's how Jesus thought about gender equality. These are how Jesus related to women in his time, when contextually his attitude was way ahead of his time. And we are still dealing with gender issues today. So here's what he was thinking and doing. And when you tell that story and you pinpoint this specific fact that he was actually telling Ganymed, listen, these are your sisters. Now, these two women are they're children of God, just like you are, even though you're a prince and you had a very privileged life so far. And I imagine that Ganymed is a young man from India with a very rich father, which perhaps had many women. He saw some things. And then when he saw Jesus behaving in a certain way, he understood things that he did not understand before. So by highlighting and showing the scene, telling the story basically in text and in paintings, we would like that to become alive for a truth seeker. So that's what we're trying to do And it's a very individual thing. So that's one aim. And we have several of those projects that, let's say, are to be consumed by yourself alone. So it's content that we provide in different ways with different technologies that allows somebody to connect to Jesus on a different level. But I do want to say something about the beyond and the in, because that's one of the projects that we've been working on that is a little bit different and has a different goal, so to speak. And that's the Jesus experience. And it is also evolving. And where it is right now is that we've finished a conceptual design, and we are now forming a steering committee of that is going to be mostly composed of people who do not know the Arantxa book. And the purpose of this project is to serve in a very particular way. We would like to use technology and the best audiovisuals that we have today to show and put people through an experience of what was it to live in the time of Jesus? What was it that people around him were feeling and doing? What was he doing and affecting them? And this is, again, through storytelling. That's the, let's say, Jesus before Christianity aspect. And then there's another phase of this project, which is, let's say, a more advanced phase or a future phase, which is going to try to answer the question, how did Jesus affect this planet until today? So what was the long-term effect since he was here 2,000 years ago until today in many different aspects of life? And that story, I think, was not really told in all of its detail by in one place. So that's this is more like a, I like to think of it, or at least the vision that I have is there is somewhere in this universe a place that you can go and see the history of this planet. And it is a live story. It keeps being updated. And of course, it's very complicated, but I'd like to replicate to the best of our ability that particular aspect of what was the effect Jesus had on humanity, and it could be individuals, but also collectively for the last 2,000 years. So this is the Jesus, let's say, beyond Christianity. And then the experience is going to be a live project in the fact, in the sense that it's going to continue updating this story to the best of our ability. And also specifically, recently we decided to collect testimonials of what is my experience with Jesus with Jesus, I guess. So, and those testimonials are going to be recorded and stored and accessed by other people. So that is going to be another beautiful fabric or tapestry of experiences that individuals have with this particular spiritual teacher and much more than that. So in a sense, the experience, the Jesus Experience Project is catering to, again, a global audience. Those who will come to the Sea of Galilee will benefit from that experience. We're thinking in the future to basically replicate that experience and bring it to other cities around the world, much like the Van Gogh immersive experience and others, which use technology to do storytelling in an immersive way. And, you know, you can do this in suitable venues around the world. And so bring this experience of Jesus to people around the world who cannot travel to Israel. And of course, there's going to be a virtual component to this. And, you know, the AI/VR, XR, all those technologies are evolving quite rapidly to the point that in not too distant future, everybody will have that just like everybody has a phone today. And then we will be able to use virtual aspects of this experience to reach everybody around the world. So that's a little bit of about what we're doing in the beyond Christianity area. But everything else, the Discover Jesus web app, the Ask Jesus chatbot that we've launched, and the Cinematic Jesus Project, which the leader of this project, Santiago, is not here today. All those are our attempts at storytelling using different technologies about what happened when Jesus was here and the effect that his bestow mission had on the people who were his contemporaries. And how is that relevant to me, you know, in my spiritual journey, if I'm looking for answers? And to do all that in a way that attempts to reach anybody. So for that, we're using that meme of before Christianity. So, you know, maybe there's something here for you, even if you're not interested in Christianity, which I think we have to try something. So all these are experiments. We don't know if they're going to work. So we're fine. And we're launching we've launched the first one back in July, the Ask Jesus chatbot. And to date, there's been almost 2,300 questions. I recently started creating short videos that we post to our website and on TikTok to see what people are asking. Of course, it's all anonymous, so we don't know who's asking what. But we have a record of all those questions, and so that we can also produce future versions that are better and also, you know, inspire others to see what is possible with these technologies. So that's a short overview of the system. One more thing that we can see now, but we haven't started working on, is what we call the Shared Journey Platform, which is going to be a way to approach the same demographic of younger truth seekers that are not interested in any specific religion or are disenfranchised from institutional religion. And we would like to provide a platform where they can consume content individually, but also have human touch points, connect to other spiritual seekers. That's why we call this the Shared Journeys. I am sharing my journey, somebody else is sharing their journey, and then there's opportunities to engage with other humans in a safe place. So that's our larger vision for the next couple of years on where this Discover Jesus app, chatbot, and other things that we're working on all fit together, again, as a system. This project is separate from the cinematic and is separate from the experience. So in a sense, we have three tracks, and within this track of the Jesus before Christianity, we have this technology platform working on cinematic presentations and on the experience. So I hope that gives an overview of all the things we're doing. And if any of the other team members want to chip in, then I yield right now.
Yes, may I say something?
Of course.
I think it's very interesting what Chuck says. Is one of the things that we have to take care mostly, and is how can we fit into the whole system, and why do we are doing something different by sharing Jesus, and how can we be different by sharing his life? But I think that one of the things that moves us more in the Center for Unity to try to focus on Jesus' life is quoted in two quotes that I really really want to get here, and one is the one that says the gospel of the kingdom is founded on the personal religious experience of the Jesus of Galilee. So we need to get into that personal religious experience of Jesus. That's the way. So probably it's different to base the whole thing in the Jesus as a person, but when we focus on his experience in the religious way he got into that religion experience, we found some pearls that we really want to get And there's another quote that I really like, which is referring to everybody, which says, mortals in all stages of spirituality and on all worlds may find in the personal life of Jesus that which will strengthen and will inspire and inspire them as they progress from the lowest spirit levels up to the highest divine values, from the beginning to the end of all personal religious experience. We aim in all. We are not just referring to the Christians or not Christians and young men. We are obviously focusing in some things to get more assertive to achieve that goal. But we are definitely we are working for everybody here. We are just trying to transform and make the world better by sharing the life and the experience and the religious experience that Jesus has. So each one of us has a model to understand what in their spirituality is reflected on that experience of Jesus. So I believe that obviously we'll quote the Durantia book because it's something that is a must. But I think we need to take care of not getting into the mistakes of the past and focusing on the experience of the religious of Jesus.
Mm. Thank you, Luis. Mesa, did you want to add something to as a response?
I did, but the air siren, I don't know if that is for our monthly check to make sure that everybody can hear the air siren is going off. So maybe I need another minute.
But just barely.
Okay. I was going to say that I understand what Oscar is saying. Marvin, I'm sorry. And I appreciate the passages in the red. What it makes me think of is that it's very similar to what my experience was, where I didn't like the religion that was about Jesus. So that felt too small for me because it felt like people wanted to interpret that for me and tell me what that meant. And it didn't match with my experience that I had with Jesus. So I feel, and this was a very Christian thing that my father used to always say, is that Jesus said, if I am lifted up, I will draw all men to me. And that struck me forcibly when I read the Urantia book, part 4. And I thought, this is, okay, the limited, perhaps this is why, right? Originally it was Jesus was not to leave any writings. He didn't want really to be about him. And I get that. And yet somehow they made it about him. Perhaps Abner and his church sounds like they had a much better handle on it. But so 2,000 years of a religion that was about Jesus. And then we get this fifth epochal revelation. And now it's like we have this fuller understanding. We know Jesus' teachings. We can see exactly what he was and who he was. And that, to me, is the, we're not making a religion here about Jesus. We are introducing a fuller, fleshed out version of who Jesus was so that people can know him and then have their own experience, religious experience of knowing God and knowing that we are part of this brotherhood, that Jesus is our brother, he's our creator. So to me, that's what it does. That's the difference, that discovering Jesus doesn't naturally lead people to want to make a religion about Jesus. If you're truly discovering Jesus, then it enriches and enhances, and you get that you are to model your life in a way that Jesus lived his life. He said to the apostles, I'm not just asking you to tell love your neighbor as yourself. That's what you've heard. That's been out there. I'm asking you to love your neighbors as I loved them. And I'm not putting this on you as a burden. This is so that you can experience this deeper level of joy. And to me, I have to know how Jesus did that if I'm going to live that out. So that's what I appreciate about discovering Jesus.
Beautiful. Well said. Thank you.
Hey, Paula?
Yes.
Yeah, I just had one thought in addition to throw into the mix here. You know, what I see Jesus doing over and over and over and over again with his apostles, and occasionally he would say, look, don't point to me. don't bring people to me. What he was saying was bring people to this intimate, nurturing relationship that they can have with our common spiritual father. And the Ranch Book expands it to be our spiritual mother as well, the Mother Spirit and our Mother Supreme, that God loves us, and that the Father's presence, God's presence, is the deepest thing inside of each of you, and each of you can have the kind of deep, profound, nurturing, personal relationship with a loving parent that I have with my Father. This is what I want to bring you to. And the mistake we make is we bring people to Jesus. Jesus was not bringing people to him. Jesus was bringing people to a living relationship with his Father, with his spiritual parent, and saying, you have a spiritual nurturing parent that is loving you right now from the deepest place inside of yourself. Go there and discover that relationship. Discover that you are sons and daughters of God, as am I. I'm also a son of God. You are also children of God. And when you move into that relationship, it will so change you that the whole way that you live in life will be transformed. You will really begin to care about each other as sisters and brothers, because you know that every other person you meet has the opportunity for this intimate connection with a loving spiritual parent. And that's the heart of the gospel. You know, and what he was saying is make this front and center. Show people that they can change the way they live in relationship with God who is inside of them. And use me and my life and my teachings as a tool to get people to that end goal. Don't make me the end goal. Make the living relationship with a parental God your end goal and use me as the exemplar. So that to me is the slippery slope that we walk, because Jesus is important. The question is, how is he important? What's the role of what he plays? And the role is not end goal. The end goal is not Jesus. The end goal is personal relationship with a parental God who is common to both us and Jesus. And Jesus says, go there. And let me show you how I live my life. I went there. I go there. It's my relationship with my Father, God, that I want to introduce you to. And that the transformative, ennobling experience of being a beloved child of that common spiritual parent. So I just think that it's critical never to lose that emphasis. The teaching people to fish is all about the intimacy of that interior relationship with God that's inside of them. And Jesus is there as our friend, our mentor, our guide to get to that goal.
Yeah, I think, Marvin, you bring up a conundrum, and the conundrum is simply this. You can't have people learn that lesson from Jesus unless you bring them to Jesus to have Jesus teach them that lesson. And I think that, and I personally think that that's what these guys are trying to do, is bring people to Jesus to learn exactly what you just said. But you can't, you know, he is the great teacher of that lesson. And so there's a conundrum there. We don't want, certainly don't want it to be all about Jesus. That's what it's been about. But it hasn't been about the real Jesus. It's been about the glorified
right.
Christ. And so
right.
if we can bring people to the real Jesus, he will be fully able to teach that lesson. And I just want to interject a few quotes, and then I want Chuck and also Andre to say something too. And then if you will, gang, please tell us about, you've told us the why of what you're doing. Love to hear about exactly what you are doing and spell out your different projects for us on the Cosmic Citizen. That would be great. But here, these are opinions of the midwayers, right? And in my opinion about the midwayers who presented part four to us, they've spent a lot of time on this planet with us, and they know us better than anybody. So when they say what we need, I take them totally to heart. But also, Lisa, you brought up a quote that I love dearly, and that is when Jesus said, "And now I declare to you that if I be lifted up on earth and in your lives, will draw all men to myself and into the fellowship of my Father." That's, to me, the crux of what we have to do. We have to lift him up. Why do we have to lift him up? So out of the noise and din of what's going on in this world, the clamoring, the incessant clamoring on this planet, if we can just lift him up above that so people can find him, then he will draw them to himself, because that's what he does. He's spirit gravity in this universe. He will draw them to himself and to the Father. He'll show them the Father. If we could just lift him up out of the noise and din of this planet, that's one. The second quote is from two quotes from paper 196. 196, 1-2, "The time is ripe to witness the figurative resurrection of the human Jesus from the burial tomb amidst the theological traditions and the religious dogmas of 19, now 20, centuries. Jesus of Nazareth must not be longer sacrificed to even the splendid concept of the glorified Christ. What a transcendent service if, through this revelation, the Son of Man should be recovered from the tomb of traditional theology and be presented as the living Jesus to the church that bears his name and to all other religions." That's a midwayer commentary that strikes right into my heart. And then the other one is one that Bob, our dear Bob Zabaha on the board posted, and this is also from paper 196. "Of all human knowledge, that which is of greatest value is to know the religious life of Jesus and how he lived it." Now, outside of reading part four of the Urantia book, I don't know how that's going to be possible. And so, is why I fully support what you guys are doing, fully support it, because I think that you have taken to heart these midwayer admonitions, and you're saying, no, we're going to do it now. We're going to hold him up in such a way that people, especially young people, can find him, and find him as never before from these wonderful teachings that are presented in the Urantia book. So bravo to all of you. Thank you. I appreciate it. And Marvin, I appreciate that you bring this up, because I know it's a concern that we, you know, don't make another religion about the Urantia book or about Jesus. So, and Lisa, I know you wanted to say something, and then I want Chuck and also Andre to have something to say too. Go ahead, Lisa.
Oh, it's okay. I was just agreeing with you, and I unmuted so that you, like, to me, and I know that for me, and that is the crux of it, is that I feel as if I do my best to point people to God, to that inner spark within them, that fragment that lives within them. But I feel like I don't always do the best job of that. And so I want my brother, my creator son, I want to be able to point people to him so that he can do the best job of it, and they can spend much more time studying what he said, how he lived, how he interacted, than the time that I can spend with them and show them. I'll still show them to the best of my ability with my life and my interactions, but I want them to be able to have that resource that was such a lifeline for me.
Thank you. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, I thought I could add here. I think it's important that we not conflate personal religion with institutional religion. Mm-hmm. They're really two very different things. So, for example, having a personal religious life that grows from a living relationship with Jesus, that's a very different thing from an institutional church that fixates a certain idea about Jesus and almost turns that into a fetish, right? Which is kind of the complaint with the religion about Jesus versus the religion of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So that religion about Jesus problem is a problem of institutional religion, you know, as far as I can see. What we're trying to do here, I think we're all on board with this, is work on the side of personal religion. And that's what I find, I just want to tell you guys, I'm so intrigued by your concept or your approach or your idea of looking at Jesus before Christianity. I think that's got a lot of interesting dimensions to it. But one of the things that does, I think, is to separate Jesus from Christianity, but without negating Christianity. It's not an attack on Christianity. It's just a perspective on Jesus that is legitimately can be found because Jesus predated Christianity, obviously. And I appreciate, Gabriel, what you said about people's confusion about that. They think Jesus was a Christian, or that he founded the Christian church. You know, there's all these ideas like that. So in a way, that idea, that approach kind of provides a clean slate for a reconsideration of Jesus, but without it being an attack on Christianity. So you're sort of putting a needle through a, I don't know what the expression is, but you're finding a path, I think, and that can open people's minds, hopefully, to the possibility of not only learning more about Jesus, but also knowing Jesus. So these passages, like in paper 195, they've been referring to it, you know, are very clear. It's like, here's one that says, this is the one that I think you quoted from, Paula. It says, the world needs to see Jesus living again. But, it says, what is now most needed is Jesus. So right. We shouldn't forget that. But our approach to bringing Jesus to the world is like introducing a friend. It's like, here, you got to meet this guy, right? You got to, and if you get to know him, it'll change your life because you want to be like him. And it's a type of personal religion, I think it's important to make that distinction. It's a type of personal religious experience that grows from a living relationship with Jesus. And that's only possible if you know him. So we have to bring Jesus forward, I think. I mean, I don't know, have to is the right way of putting that. I think we all, in our hearts, want to. Because it's like you just met this person and you want to introduce him to all your friends, right? It's kind of so like that. So we're not talking about founding a new institutional church that's going to fixate a fetishized concept of Jesus. We're talking about a living relationship. And that's purely personal. That's purely personal. So that's kind of what's intriguing about this project to me. In the approach you're taking with the Jesus before Christianity idea, it's because, like, you know, it's sort of intriguing. Sort of, what are they saying there? What does that really mean? And it won't necessarily, even for Christians, it won't necessarily take anything away inherently from what they personally derive from Christianity. Because I think it's important to remember that countless people over the last 2,000 years, like you were talking about, Gabriel, about, you know, what's happened over the last 2,000 years, countless people have found Jesus in spite of the fact that Christianity became a religion about Jesus. In spite of that, people have found the spirit of Jesus. And Christianity has been the avenue for that for many people. So there's people, discover personal religion sometimes, in spite of what the institutional religion has done to make that almost impossible. And it happens anyway, because the Spirit of Jesus is so powerful. You know, you read, you know, even in the Bible, you can find passages that just like, yeah, right, that, this is something special, you know, what this guy was teaching. So anyway, I just want to uplift the idea of, you know, what they say here in paper, well, it's paper 196, where they say one of the most important things in human living is to find out what Jesus believes, to discover his ideals, to strive to the achievement of his exalted life purpose. And that's only possible by knowing him. And knowing him is inherently personal. It's a personal relationship, just like any other. So I like the idea that you're opening up that as a avenue, as a possibility. People can discover Jesus in a new way and actually get to know him, have a relationship with him, which is what's going to change the world. Anyway, so.
Thank you, Chuck. Andre, did you want to chime in?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a fascinating conversation so far, and I'm sorry that we've had to have Miguel and Mike drop off. I'm sure they could only stay on for part of it, and I wanted to just let Gabriel know we did see Santiago on the board earlier, and. perhaps we should have acknowledged him because he left the board early on, and I'm not sure whether he'll come onto the board later, but if somebody reaches out to him, but he was on the board earlier. But this is a fascinating conversation because it's really comes down, first of all, you know, Marvin's concerns are certainly legitimate, and they have a place. And I know that we're always, in some ways, always more concerned about ourselves than what anybody else could do. And I find it really interesting to hear that, you know, for instance, for Luis Miguel, who shared that this wonderful novelization about the life and teachings of Jesus that was done by J.J. Benitez and is an outright plagiarization of the Arantia book, has brought people by the thousands in Latin America right. to the Arantia book.
Yeah.
By the thousands.
Yeah.
Millions of copies of his novel have sold. He's made millions of dollars on this. The man is a multimillionaire. Many times over as a result of what he wrote based on what he derived from the Arantia teachings. And I use that as an illustration to say we know not what
right.
The power of the teachings of Jesus in whatever form they are found have to bring people to a knowledge of the gospel. And I think the other issue that's clear here is, here would be the null hypothesis question to ask. How could we distill the life and teachings of Jesus in such a way and get them across to people so that we wouldn't have to present anything about Jesus at all? and of course, you know, I don't think anybody's saying that, but it's a
no.
good null hypothesis question. It takes it to the extreme to indicate that there's no way that we can get across fully the life and teachings of Jesus without getting across something about the life and teachings of Jesus. The gospel is embedded in that. Now, the other side of that is to lift Jesus up also means, and this really has become clear to me in the last little while here, is that some of lifting Jesus up is in our own lives and how we live our lives. But I wonder how many people can get to that without having seen the illumination somehow of the life and teachings of Jesus in some form. And what's remarkable about the Center for Unity is that it's striving to do that in unique and novel ways that have not been tried. They're new creative approaches that are meant to do exactly what the Urantia book says, to restate, you know, the gospel, to restate the life and teachings of Jesus newly to every generation. You know, this generation is not receiving what we have to give them in the old form that we were giving it. You know, I'm a member of an Episcopalian men's prayer group that meets every morning. And, you know, that the Episcopalian church is losing membership. They're closing a number of other churches was one of the latest news. 10 Episcopalian churches in various dioceses in Oregon were closing. And this is happening over and over again. This is happening in virtually every denomination except for some evangelical mega churches, which our Urantia book would tell us are appealing only to those who are looking for that secondhand religion, which is easy, which only requires assent to a belief and, you know, takes people forward from there. And that's not to disparage that there isn't genuine religious faith in those mega churches. Some of them are operating and doing a great deal of good. But here we have in the Center for Unity, in my opinion, a remarkable effort to bring the teachings of Jesus to a new generation that isn't literary. They're not reading books, at least in North America, maybe not in many other places in the world, maybe not in Europe as much either. And we have to find, essentially use the new media that are available to us to use as vehicles to get across to people. And perhaps through that, in the same way, I mean, I always looked at that, you know, Life After Death magazine that Mo produced. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, that's beautiful. That's glossy. And wow, does it preach to the choir. And here we find out, again, on this same call, in the same way that Luis Miguel tells us he's one of the thousands who came to the Urantia book through J.J. Benitez's plagiarism in El Caballo de Troya, you know, here we have Mike Robinson telling us he found the Urantia book through Mo's publication of Life After Death.
Right.
So we don't know how we're going to reach people. And so whatever we can do that is effective, God bless us. You know, there have been so many non-efforts, and we all have been subject to seeing what happened in the 80s when we were being told we couldn't do this and we couldn't do that, and you could only use a paragraph, and it had to be fair use. And you know, we're so far from that now. And finally, we have some real creative endeavors occurring. So,
and isn't that
amazing? That's probably enough for me. I really would love to hear more from, as you were saying, more on some of the efforts. And maybe one question that would prompt things. You know, some people have said some wonderful things about the Ask Jesus chatbot, and some have deep questions about it. You know, one of the deep questions, if I could, you know, paraphrase what's out there, is, you know, goodness, how can a machine learning model pretend to be answering for Jesus? What is that about? You know, and people have concerns about that. But again, it's a different medium, and it might be interesting to get some answers on that.
Andre, that I love that question, and it's a perfect segue, but I just want to point out that Santiago has come back on the board, and so
wonderful.
Love to get his point of view on some of this, so I'm going to put him on. Hi, Santiago.
Yeah, very good.
Hello,
hi, guys.
Santiago.
Sorry. Hey, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes.
All right. Sorry, I'm on the highway, so the signal's not that good, so... Pardon me if it's kind of cracky, but I'm here.
Yay. Have you been listening, and do you have any thoughts on what we've been discussing? Or
I heard a little bit then the signal, because I was covering the mountains. I couldn't really hear a lot, but I know that you've been talking about what we're doing in the CFU.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will go ahead and leave you on, Santiago, and if you drop off, you know, we'll understand why. But I would love if, Gabriel, if you and the CFU crew here could address the Jesus chatbot and the question that Andre just presented, because that is another big question that people have out there, and give you a chance to address it.
Yeah. So let me explain first, like a little bit of a primer, what is a chatbot and what is this new technology, specifically this chatbot technology, how is it working and why it can do the things that it can do. Of course, it's not pretending to be Jesus. So imagine you have a very sophisticated program, this large language model that has read everything on the internet and has processed what it's read in a certain way. So it's basically encoding meaning. So you can think of paragraphs or chunks of text, but it's not just text. Of course, it has been trained to do many different things. But for now, let's just talk about text. There's a way to encode the meaning. And then later, when you're asking it a question, when you're chatting with it, the simplistic way of explaining what is happening behind the scene, which is very complicated, and even the people who develop this technology don't really understand the emergent capabilities. So what happens is it's taking this question or this whatever it is that you're putting in your chat text box, and it's trying to come up with a continuation of text that starts from that question. This is basically simplistically what it's doing. And so what we did is, in the first version, which we launched a few months ago, we just used ChatGPT as is, and there's something called the system prompt, which is basically a message that you're telling the chatbot how to behave. What is it that you want it to do? And you can tell it to speak in a certain tone, to use certain phraseology, to refer to certain references. This is basically a message. And so this chatbot, the first version was very simple. Is here's the message, and it's on the website. You can read what it says. And then here's a question, and it goes back to ChatGPT only with this very specific message. And I was as surprised as anybody else that it was able to bring very inspiring answers. And we have stories of what people were asking and the questions and the answers. And you can see that it's inspiring. But factually, when you're asking it something factually, it sometimes hallucinates, which basically means it makes up stuff, and sometimes it doesn't get facts from people, places, dates, numbers. And even though it has read the entire Urantia book, it has it in its memory. It has so many other things in its memory that even if I say, just use the Urantia book, it's very difficult for it to say, I'm going to disregard everything else. So people have been inventing different technologies to make it more use something specific when it answers the question. So the next version that we have right now on the website takes the Urantia book, just the Urantia book, nothing else. And it encodes the entire Urantia book, all of the parts, not just part four, into what I call chatbot memory. It's the special way where chatbots remember things. And so when somebody is asking now a question in this version, it goes into this memory and it does a very special search. It's basically answering the question, you know, if I had to choose the most relevant paragraphs of the Urantia book to this particular question, which ones those would be? And they're not based on keywords, but based on meaning, because chatbots encode things based on meaning, which is different than a search engine that looks at words or combinations of words. So this is the new version. You're basically asking a question, and it goes and gets, in this case, 20 paragraphs. And then the instruction to the chatbot is, take these 20 paragraphs, so I'm actually giving it the text, and then here's the question, and here's your instructions, and now give me an answer. And I can see already that there's a market significant improvement in the factual accuracy. If it manages to get the right paragraphs, it will give you a very good answer. If it doesn't manage to get the right paragraphs, it will give you a so-so answer. So the next version we're working on now is, okay, let's do that and also take your question and actually go and search the Urantia book, regular search, just like the Foundation website or all the other websites that have a search engine, same search engine we've been using for years. And now bring me those paragraphs too. And now, so I'm going to take search engine paragraphs and chatbot memory paragraphs and your question and the instructions. And I think that's going to make it even more accurate. So that's the next version that we're working on right now. So to make it all, to sum it up, I will now say something that I have no way of substantiating, but this is my own personal belief. So take it with a grain of salt. I believe that spirit influences can work through this software because it's a probabilistic model. And of course, the spirit of truth and mother spirit can do whatever they want anyway. So I believe that there's a way for them to use the software to customize the answer to that particular person and give that person the answer that they need at that moment. And I don't know how to prove, I cannot prove this, obviously, but I have a feeling that once we've built it, it's a tool that the spirit influences can work through. So our job is to make it available. And then whatever happens now is not our job. I'll just finish by saying, we're not saying this is Jesus. We're not saying it has mind. We're not saying it's connected to any spirit. We're not saying any of those things. We don't really know what is possible. And of course, we're clearly saying this is a chatbot. It's using the technology we have today. And it's going to make mistakes, and it's not perfect. So it's an experiment. Personally, I feel it's very valuable. And I can tell you that I read every morning all the questions that people ask. I don't know who asks what, but please don't ask something that you would not want somebody else to read, even though we don't know it's you. Because we're using those questions and the answers to build the new versions. And then I make videos and posts based on those questions and answers, and they're very inspiring. And people ask very creative things. And you can also ask in your language, other languages than English. And most of the time it will give you an answer in your language. It does all the translations automatically because all the software is working in English, but the large language model is, in a sense, a little bit language agnostic because it has been trained on many languages. So this is how it works. And we're going to continue working and creating new versions of this. There's many different things we can try. And I think I'd like to also create a more research-oriented version that allows you like the vision I had in my head is, okay, let's take the smartest person on the planet in this aspect, which has perfect memory of the Arantxa book. It remembers everything. It has access to the Arantxa book, and it understands in chatbot fashion, and you can ask it questions, and it's your research assistant. And this is how I use GPT for everything else. You know, it is very, very intelligent in those aspects, very creative. And if you haven't tried ChatGPT or Bard or Claude, or it really is something you should try, and just play with it to see what it can do. It's an amazing tool. I studied computer science. I've been working with computers since I was 10 years old. So I'm amazed that I never imagined that I will see something like this in my lifetime. This is an amazing, amazing technology. And just like any other technology of this magnitude, it will have a lot of effects on all of us, some positive, some negative. But it's really something everybody has to try and experience. So that's it.
So, Gabriel, when will it launch, and how can we try it?
Ask Jesus has been launched. It's on our website, thecenterforunity.org. And you go to projects, and you will see there Ask Jesus. You can go to our Facebook page or TikTok channel and see videos. And every day there's a post with a video and a question and answer. So you can try it yourself. So thecenterforunity.org, and then go through to the projects and Ask Jesus. And we can put probably a link in this show notes. So,
yeah, I just did. I put it on the board. But again,
Paula,
that's
has
www.
Put that in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
the
I can
center
I can
for unity.org. Go ahead.
I apologize. I underscore that the in front is all important. There is
yes.
another Center for Unity site that doesn't have the. So thecenterforunity.org is important.
Yes. And I want to point out that our darling Susan is on the board, you guys, and she posted
yeah.
just a moment ago. We just had great feedback about the Ask Jesus chat bot from a young person this morning. She has been enjoying asking questions and has some ideas, so we are sending her to Gabriel as another young person to serve as a volunteer and tester for the new model. Yay! See, that's the exponential nature of this thing. And I personally think, you guys, it's going to blow us all away. I really do. I think it's going to bring hundreds and thousands of young people into the teachings of Jesus from the Arantxa book. I really do. I don't think anything we've ever done to date will be as successful as this will. That's the feeling I get. And I absolutely agree with Gabriel that our friends can use it as a tool. You know, Jesus' simple invitation always was, whosoever will, let him come. And I think that our job then is to just build places for them to come to. If we don't get out there and make it available, where will they come? And,
right.
You know. So that's what we got to do. That's our job, to make these teachings available so that whosoever will may come. And I think they will. And I think we need to hold on to our hats because this is happening. So maybe you guys can tell us about the Discover Jesus app and what that's about. And I know Gary has done fabulous, wonderful, beautiful art. Again, through AI, to create just this rich experience of Jesus with visuals. And I think we need to point that out, too, that people can find that as well. And really go in depth. So does somebody want to speak to that, Lisa? Or,
I'll just real quickly say that the paintings that Gary is doing using Midjourney and augmenting and working with that. I know that that is, that in and of itself is a huge endeavor, but as he has said, he could not conceivably do all of the artwork needed for this project without this tool. But I love the depictions of the personality. So I was particularly drawn to Rebecca in the story of her falling. Who would not have fallen in love with Jesus and this incredible young man that he was, and wanting her father? She was a woman of privilege, right? Dad, I want this young, man. I want to marry this young man. And her dad also admiring him and being, all right, let's make this happen. And just the, I identified so strongly with the position that Jesus was put in, the awkwardness of not wanting to hurt her, but this was not part of his mission. And then how she just lovingly continued to follow him and be in the women's corps for the rest of her days, right? But the picture that Gary produced of Rebecca is just stunning. Is stunning to me. I saw it and I was like, oh yes, that's her. That's Rebecca to me. So it is a, it brings it to life in a way that just really resonates. And I just have had so, have loved reading my whole life, and often didn't like it when a particular cover or any would not line up with who I thought this person looked like. And I have not had that experience in looking at all of these things. I have just been delighted, and my imagination has been stirred, and it has just brought it to life in a really dynamic way.
Wonderful. I couldn't agree more. I have the same experience with it. And Gary, your images are stunning. They're just stunning. And I've been a lover of Jesus art all my life. And, of course, for Truth Book, being instrumental in that project, I searched the web for years for Jesus art, useful Jesus art that we could use, because I'm a visual learner myself, and it's deeply moving to me. And your art is splendid. Thank you. Thank you for all the art that you give to the movement. God bless you, brother. It's pretty
you're
special.
You're being very kind about me, and I'm obviously trying to do the best I can for the revelation, and I'm as Lisa already touched on it. It really would be difficult to make this work for the Discover Jesus app without some scaffolding, and the Midjourney application really helps with getting at least close approximation to what I might need. Although it's not as quick a process as it might first appear. But it's funny that she was talking about Rebecca, I'm currently looking at my screen. I'm doing Pontius Pilate right now, and I try to imagine how these people felt, and then I'm using curious prompts to try to get an emotive sort of expression back that I then augment, and I'm hoping that that authenticity comes through, but it's actually really I can't really explain. I try some pretty interesting stuff to try and get the kind of baseline work, and I'm also trying to keep them on style as well. I'm trying to keep things so they have a genealogy, so it kind of all feels the same. I'm not trying to make it look completely photorealistic, and I can speak to this because I've seen some of the work that Chuck's been doing, and Chuck's work is fantastic. He's working in a different stem to me. His challenge is different. I won't go into the details of it, but I'm working in a more illustrational way to try and bring a holistic and familial feel to the entire images. Sometimes I'm more successful than others. I think it's basically in the right bandwidth, but the portraits are quite interesting to me, because they're giving an insight that that you are likely, it's likely imprinting on you as, at a value level as you're reading about these people. That's really important. And I've been fiddling, is that the right word, with Pontius Pilate for a while. It's a slow process anyway, but this is, it really helps to have the backup of these AI image processing things. And I mentioned this before in an interview earlier this week. You know, I wouldn't ethically be on be using AI art as an artist myself if we were trying to make a profit from this. But this is wholly a non-profit thing. Yeah, I'm doing this work. I'm doing this work for Jesus. I'm not doing this work for in the hope that the Center for Unity is going to make a bunch of money, because that's not the goal of it at all. The Center for Unity is projects that are trying to get Jesus in interesting ways expressed across the planet. So I feel okay by using these applications in that. So it's pretty interesting to use. I've used it a lot now. I'm painting a lot, but as you know, I'm super busy. but I really appreciate what you said, Lisa. That I kind of got that vibe about Rebecca when I finally got it right. I was like, wow, yeah, okay, because she has this kind of look of like, I'm impending disappointment. I thought I was trying to evoke. Yeah, I was trying to evoke that.
But this sort of like this subtle longing. I just love the expression on her face. Mm. It resonates.
I recently saw a video.
Paula. You go carry on.
Well, no, I just want to say I saw a video of your many of your pieces that you've done on YouTube, and Susan posted that on the board. It's at the YouTube URL, so it's almost impossible to say how to find it. But I'm sure if you went to YouTube and searched for Center for Unity Jesus Art, that video would pop up. It gives you a really splendid taste of the many pictures. And we're down to our last 7 minutes, guys, and you know the time goes by so fast. I wish we had 2 more hours to talk about this. But, Gabriel, I'd just love for you to touch on what the Discover Jesus app is and how important it is before we close the show today.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So imagine creating a database, which technically is called a knowledge graph, that collects all the persons mentioned in part 4 of the Urantia book, all the places, all the events. An event is something that happened, like the transfiguration or the baptism or a particular sermon or a particular miracle. All the relationships between two people that really matter, like Joseph and Mary, there was a rich relationship there, groups of people that did things together, and specifically, and I think that's the most creative thing, topics, which are cross-sectional looks into anything and everything you can think about that is related to all the things we've been discussing, aspects of the gospel, personal relationship with God, how Jesus lived his religious life, what was he thinking and doing about different things that matter to people today still, that personally can help them in their life. So we did all this work. It's thousands of hours of work of collecting this basically raw information. And then Gary and I were, naive enough to think that we will find a way to present this information in an appealing way. And we tried something which was very, very crude. And then Lisa, bless her, his wife, Gary's wife. Lisa Tao. She looked at what we were doing, and we hired two programmers to help us, and we spent a couple months working on a prototype. And she looked at it, and I don't remember exactly what she said, but she said something like, "You guys, this really sucks. We can do it better." and that was really the big breakthrough, because we needed somebody like her with her talent. And she's not even a student of the Urantia book. She just jumped in and led us through a process where we were asking the question, how can we take something, this part 4 of the Urantia book, and present it to younger truth seekers who are not your Urantia Book students? That was the question we went out into the adventure. She led us through some focus groups, and we had young Urantia Book students, your daughter included. May was one of them. And then we asked questions, and we did brainstorming, and we did some creative thinking and visualizations. And eventually we get a set of features. And what we landed on was, let's rewrite, or let's write a whole Wikipedia. It looks very much like Wikipedia, but it's very much cleaner. And it's just about the life and teachings of Jesus. And it's just based on part four of the Urantia Book. It's got a clean, fresh interface. It's now working on a desktop, but it will work also on a phone, of course, and on an iPad. And one thing that is important to remember, it is a website. It's not an app. We call it a web app. And it's important that it is a website because all of that content is original pieces. You can think of each one of those pieces, which are 1,000 words, 2,000 words, sometimes 10,000 words, about each one of those things that I mentioned, people, places, groups, topics, events. They have a page. And all of that text will be used by Google and by future language models that will take that text, and now they will know more things about Jesus from the things that people wrote. We have a very meticulous editorial process that Andre and Mike are leading. We have a group of, over time, it's more than 10 people that were writing, Rick and Martha and Mary Jo and Susan and Roland and Greg and Tom and Monica, and if I forget someone, please forgive me, but we had many people, again, thousands and thousands of hours of work, volunteer work. This entire project is probably around 100,000 hours of work.
Wow.
And many tens of thousands of dollars. And of course, all of this came from donations in time and in treasure from Urantia Book students. So we're very fortunate to have amazing donors and volunteers. We will launch the first version, God willing, on November 15th. There will be a launch party, and you're all invited. If you want a link,
yay,
please send us an email to contact@thecenterforunity.org, and I will send you an invitation. If you're on our mailing list, you will get an email with an invitation a few days before the event. We will have a live demo. We will have a beautiful presentation in which I will tell the story, which actually started probably 6 years ago. So this, to tie in everything, you know, 6 years ago, I had a one slide presentation and I could not see any of these things. And I will tell the story of what happened in every station until Gary and I started working on this almost 3 years ago. And then I had talks with Jim English, which basically threw the word metaverse, which 2 years ago was already being discussed. So there's a history. I will tell the history. You will see the app, and then it will be live, and you're all invited. So I hope I gave an overview of what it is.
Wonderful. Thank you. And I just want to reiterate, please, to our listeners on the board today and live, the live show, and also those who will listen in the archive, go to www.thecenterforunity.org. Look at the projects. Just take it all in. Make a contribution if you want. Ask to get involved. It's a wonderful project. I've seen many, many, many projects in the Urantia Movement. This one is just splendid, in my opinion, and something that is going to last well into the future and be a legacy for everyone involved. Then we can look back and say, wow, we were a part of that. And thank you all. Thank you, Gabriel. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Lisa. And, of course, our crew, Marvin and Andre and Chuck, and all of our listeners on the board. We love you guys. Thanks. Spread the word. It's going to be really, really special. And
all right.
So appreciate it.
Wonderful show, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for telling us all about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Sincerely. Yeah.
Love you all.
Have a
and
wonderful
And we'll return
week.
To paper 7 next week.
Yeah.
I look forward to that.
Great.
All right.
Thanks, Gary. Bye. Love you guys. Have a great week.
Love okay.
You. Thanks okay. for being on today.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.